The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Paul Kimmage, before I talk to you about rugby and doping and other things, you're still a keen leisure cyclist. So what did you make of that Late Late Show item on Friday night? I think you did see it, did you?
I did, and I listened to Kieran with interest there, and I'd just like to add my support to everything he said and my disgust to what happened on the Late Late Show. I mean, I can give you a list as long as my arm about things that are funny and things that should be, you know, that can lend themselves to humour. The interaction between motorists and cyclists on roads is not one of them. We had 15 deaths last year. I don't know how many injuries there have been. I was on my own bike yesterday. I'm hyper-conscious of cars behind me and in front of me. I've been cycling since I was 10 years of age. We've always been, as a group, anytime I'm out, very conscious of the cars coming around us. We've always made time to pull over and lend them an easy passage through. The debate now should be, between motors, we have to share the same road. We're the guys who pay the price. The motors will just carry on, and we hear all the time, cyclists killed in collision. It's always the cyclist who pays the price for this. I'm sorry, it's just, this is not a subject to be taken lightly.
Okay, let's move on and let's talk about rugby, because you wrote yesterday in the Sunday Independent about a story which has got a limited amount of coverage over recently. Munster last summer signed as a replacement for Dunnock Ryan, who's now doing so well with Racing in Paris, a South African who had a previous doping conviction. And you have an issue with this. Tell us about this.
Well, I want to start, please, Matt, by paying tribute to my colleague Rory O'Connor in the Irish Independent for putting this really, really important issue on the agenda. And the issue is not Gerben Grabler and his two-year ban for steroids. Let me outline what the issue is. We play a little game, Matt, and we played this game, and I know Munster fans will enjoy this and rugby fans will enjoy it, because they enjoyed it the last time we played, when we all had a good laugh about Bradley Wiggins and the hypocrisy surrounding the conduct of Team Sky. So let's play this again. I want you to read it. I'm going to hand you some cuttings and some bits and pieces. This is from an editorial you wrote in the Sunday Tribune, the first line, in 1998.
October 1998.
Yeah.
I said, the Irish Rugby Football Union reacted hysterically to the column by former Irish international Liam Francis in this newspaper last week.
And the column was about the steroid problem in Irish rugby at the time. That was 1998. Here's the response of, I want you to read out the response of two Munster players from that same edition.
Indeed, well, it's the same edition. This was the week after Neil Francis wrote the piece. He wrote another piece which we put in full page under the headline, How I Knew Irish Players Took Drugs. And it was comments that had been made during the week. We had one from Donald Lenehan on Monday, who said he was casting aspersions on any player who'd ever played in the Francis era. Therefore, I'm very annoyed about it. What annoys me is that the man in the street could believe that type of thing. And there was another comment from Keith Wood, who said, in all the time I've been playing the game, I've never seen or heard of any player who's ever taken anything.
Now, let's fast forward to November 2014 and an interview I did with a French international, Laurent Benezech, who'd written a book called Rugby, What Are Your Values? About the growing problem of doping in rugby. Okay? And let's look at some of the reaction to that. And a column by Alan Quinlan in the Irish Times. Just read me the headline of Alan's response.
Okay.
Alan Quinlan's response in the Irish. Just the headline to the column.
Well, it's a quote actually taken from inside the article. It says, I'm not naive enough to think there are no drugs in rugby, but we need more evidence.
Right. Now, what picture did the Irish Times run with that column?
It had Irish players warm up in the Keep Rugby Clean IRB anti-doping t-shirts before the 2014 Junior World Championship match against Fiji, which took place in New Zealand.
Now, Joe Schmidt was asked about this. Just read me the headline on the column about Joe Schmidt's reaction and what that says.
This is from the Irish Times. Joe Schmidt rejects suggestion Irish game has a doping problem.
Now, this is from
he also said, nor does he feel legal supplements have been abused at any level of the game here. That's in the body of the text.
Yeah. Now, here's the a page from the Irish Rugby Football Union's website. And a photograph of two players. Just read out what they're holding up there.
Okay, it's a picture of Simon Zeebo and Jamie Heaslip holding up a sign, Keep Rugby Clean, underneath World Rugby Anti-Doping.
Yeah.
And it says, actually, I don't want to read the line underneath. It's published an anti-doping report which shows that 267 tests were carried out in Irish rugby across the 2015-16 season with no adverse findings recorded.
Now, here is two quotes from the IRFU Chief Executive Officer, Philip Brown, in that same piece. Just read out what Philip Brown has to say about doping in rugby.
The IRFU has a zero tolerance policy to cheating within rugby and is committed to delivering ongoing education in the area of anti-doping. Second line is, as a sport, our message is clear. If you are doping, there is no place for you in rugby.
Okay, so see, I don't have a problem with Philip Brown telling us this about the zero tolerance attitude to doping rugby. Here's what I need explained to me. If Philip Brown comes out tomorrow and says, listen, guys, rugby is a professional game and winning is what pays the bills, that's absolutely fine with me. But that's not what he's saying. Philip Brown is telling us, send your kids along to play rugby. It's a safe sport. We'll take care of them. And everything will be fine. All I'm asking Philip Brown and the rugby community to do is spare me that hypocrisy when they go along and Philip Brown and the IRFU rubber stamp a decision to bring a steroids cheat in from South Africa to play for Munster.
Okay, well, I can't speak for Philip Brown. He's not here to answer for himself, and we'll have to put it to him subsequently to this to actually answer that, and I made that undertaking. We will contact him and ask him. But I suppose the key thing here is that...
And the custodians of Munster Rugby. Yes. Gareth Fitzgerald is the CEO of Munster Rugby. I'd very much like to hear from him.
Okay, Gerbler served a suspension. He got a two-year ban. He was caught. He admitted it. And I suppose the question a lot of people have is, if there is a ban and you serve it, are you supposed to be banned for life? I mean, 2 years is the actual punishment that is there. He did his time, so why should he be required to be unofficially banned in addition to that?
Well, I don't know whether you listened to Eddie O'Sullivan on Off the Ball last week.
No, I didn't.
Or Brian O'Driscoll. They are both of the opinion that this two-year ban for steroids is a nonsense, okay? So... we have a choice to make. Most people, I think, most players in the game would regard this two-year ban as a nonsense. So we have a choice to make in that scenario. We're not obliged. The Munster Rugby are not obliged to sign a drugs cheat. There are plenty of young kids coming through from their academies. Plenty of young Irish kids playing rugby here. They could easily take one of those. They're not obliged. They aren't obliged to do this. So why do they do it?
Maybe they're not as good.
Well, then come out and tell us, as I said... come out and tell us, folks, winning is all that counts, because the message this sends to the kids in their academy is, kids, cheat to win, you'll get a contract with Munster, and the Munster coach will put his arm around you and tell you that everything is okay.
Okay, Neil Francis is with us as well, who was quoted earlier. Neil, this came up as an issue last week. There was talk that Gerbrand Gerbler would be included in the Munster squad to play against his old club Racing yesterday. He wasn't. The only reason he was signed, ironically, is because the IRFU decided not to give Donegal Ryan a national contract, and he headed off to Racing, and Munster had to replace him. Were Munster right to give Gerbler a second chance?
No, I think it's bad business. Sends out a bad vibes. Just on, you know, I agree with Paul. I don't think you have a choice. There's I don't know, five or six decent second rows floating around, and I just thought just a bad idea to sign him. And I was quite surprised, because he went from Western Province to Racing and he performed well for Racing, and then suddenly he's in Munster. So, you know, Ryan going one way and Grobler going the other way. I'd love to have been in the room to find out what was going on when that deal was done. But he's here now, and they're going to play him. And I don't agree with it. I think it's just send out the wrong signal across the board.
But hold on, do you think that if a player is convicted effectively or found guilty of doping, that he should never play again? Or if he is playing in other countries, that at least Irish rugby should have nothing to do with him?
Yeah, I don't think they should. They just sort of say, look, sorry, you know, I wrote a piece about this. You're hanging judge there, Paul. Paul wrote a piece there yesterday, and I got hung without a trial. And I wrote a piece about Grobler 2 years ago, and I found it very interesting on a whole level, a whole different level. One was that, you know, he was 23 when he took them. Now, most young men at that stage aren't even able to tie their own shoelaces. So this guy, where did he access the drugs? You know, who gave him the needles? Who gave him the doses? Who told him that, you know, sort of a 3 or 4 week cycle? You know, how is somebody like him able to find these drugs. And I found it very interesting that he actually pleaded guilty. So I just sort of thought, you know, was there a systematic doping program going on here? Because when Chile boy Ralapelli, who was another South African player, he was also found guilty of taking drostenolone, which seems to be the drug of choice. It's a pretty good muscle bulker, and it's an injectable. So they have to inject these things. Where do they get the expertise for these? And normally when a player is found guilty of taking steroids, you know, they put up a big defence and they sort of come out with all sorts of outrageous excuses. This kid just put his hands up and said,
Two things strike me from that, son Neil. One is that if he was required to do it by an employer, why should he suffer the consequences of being forced into an action by his employer, if that was the case? And I'm not saying specifically that it was. And the second thing is, you know, everyone does things in their life that's a mistake that they may regret afterwards. Should they have their career ended for making a mistake?
Well, it's certainly limited. Like, you never know where
it's not a mistake, it's a decision.
It's not a mistake.
It's a decision.
It could be a bad decision.
No.
Come on. Everyone makes bad
decisions
in their life.
I'll tell you what, I'll have some sympathy for Grobler if, as Neil very made a very good point about, if he comes out and tells, who are these experts? Who actually helped you to do that? Give us the list of these people. If he wants to help rugby, and if he wants us to believe that everything he's done since has been clean and above board, and that he deserves a second chance, come out and tell us how you did this, where you got the expertise from, and we'll think about it then. Now, that doesn't negate the point, the central point here. And Neil, I didn't hang you out to dry. All I mentioned was the fact that I'd read those two pieces you've done on Grobler. I was very surprised that there was no reaction from you on the programme on Friday.
I actually forgot to bring it up.
Okay.
So it wasn't Neil or Paul Wallace's fault. I actually forgot to bring it up as a topic.
But it's not just Neil. Where's Keith Wood? We haven't heard a word from him until yesterday. Jamie Hislop, Joe Schmidt, all the guys that were mentioned in that previous stuff we did. Ron Lagarda, all these guys are Munster players. And the Munster brand has been damaged, as the point Brian O'Driscoll made on Friday. The Munster brand has been damaged. This is a terrible message to be sending out. Now, where are the Munster players? The iconic Munster players, where are they? We haven't heard from them. What are they doing?
Okay, well, we'll have to ask some of them on as well. What do you think, Neil Francis? Because this is overshadowing our discussion about what happened over the weekend to the various provinces.
Gerbrand Grobler for Ireland. I see John Klein wants to play for Ireland. I'm sure we could turn Grobler into a project player now and have the two South Africans in our second row.
Don't be so facetious now, Fran, please. Come on.
Are we still talking about the drugs? Are we talking about the European Cup now?
Well, we'll see. We're going to come back to the drugs because we're going to have to put questions to various people that have been highlighted by Paul and things. So briefly, your assessment, Neil Francis, of the weekend's rugby.
I was strange with Rafting. They were pretty good for periods of the game. Munster, again, just showed just great resilience to sort of get back into it. And I'd say split down 50-50 down the whether it's a go for go for a bonus try at the back end of the game when it was there for them. I don't think they would have got it. I think Munster are very clever in terms of holding out, and they would have realised how critical that would have been. So I think Racing made the right decision to go for the point, win the game, because Munster could do anything. Still two or three minutes left in the game, Munster could have done anything there. And I think Racing probably go off to Leinster and win that game. But I think, Leinster, I think they still have to win down in Montpellier as well. That's, I thought disgraceful that Dave Rennie, we said it on Friday, he's an ambitious coach
team,
there,
yeah.
And put out that team. And I wouldn't get carried away. The Leinster A side would put up a far better struggle than Glasgow did. They were a disgrace.
Okay. Listen, I'm going to have to leave it with you there, Neil Francis. Thank you very much. Before we turn to football, do you want to have a last word on this issue of the drugs, Paul?
Well, I just want to reiterate something a point that Ger Gilroy made. And this is the central point about what they've done in signing this player. Just let me dig it out here. Okay, this is something Ger Gilroy said on Off the Ball. What does it say to Munster fans, and what do the Munster fans have to say about this? And if you're a sponsor, are you happy to be associated with the fact that this guy is now representing Munster at the province, Irish Rugby by extension, and the brands who are associated with it?
Okay. Okay, just before we start talking about Martin and Neil, yesterday's Liverpool-Manchester City match. You watch a bit of Liverpool, don't you, Paul?
I watched it yesterday and I was jumping out of
Wasn't
my seat.
Wasn't it the best it fun that second half?
It was absolutely tremendous, yeah, tremendous. I watched it with my son, who's a Liverpool fan, and I think I was more excited about it than he was when Liverpool started knocking them in, especially is it Firmino's goal? Yeah.
The second goal,
yeah.
Tony Cascarino, it showed Manchester City can be beaten, but it'll take a team with an enormous levels of energy and a willingness to take chances pushing up to do it.
Well, I think that the style, Matt, of Liverpool is something that City don't come up against very often. If you go back to Pep's Bayern Munich team when he took them to Barcelona once and was 4-0 down and made huge changes, and he went there with a very brave style, Pep. He wants to play the game the way he does. With that, there isn't many teams. I can't think of too many teams in the Premier League that would do what Liverpool do, and they, you know, great athleticism, we know that, skill in forward areas, but player style that really goes for the jugular. And I think that's the big difference, is that I did speak to you on Friday, Matt. I said to you that I felt Liverpool could win it because of the way they play, and City doesn't happen to face that very often, do they?
No, indeed. But Liverpool then, I mean, there still was always the fear for Liverpool that they would actually throw it away at the end, wasn't there? Now, I know Virgil van Dijk is there to sort out when he actually is fit, the hamstring injury. But yeah, and yesterday, they need a goalkeeper, don't they? And they possibly need another defender or two.
Yeah, well, Matt, I mean, what's incredible from Klopp for me is when everyone was clamouring for people to be changed, a goalkeeper, a centre-half, and that, he stayed with players, left-back, he stayed with Moreno. You know, he didn't make the change. Then suddenly, out of the blue, he makes the change. And he did that with the left-back, he did that with the centre-half, and he's done that with the goalkeeper, Karius, coming in yesterday. That we all thought there was change, and then before you think, no, that's not going to happen, then the change happens. Yes, they have to buy a new keeper. I think that's inevitable. Unless Karius has an unbelievable second part of the season, he will change that position as well. Matt, I've said to you before, Gomez was $3.5 million. Matip was a free transfer. Van Dijk, $75 million, and you look at $12 million for Robertson. That's less than $100 million for that back four. That's their best back four, and I think that's good value. Apart from one player, they've done a lot of good business defensively.
Okay. It struck me as well watching that game yesterday, Paul, the difference between Liverpool's approach in taking on Manchester City and Manchester United's when Mourinho, the last occasion when he played against them.
Well, how would you be feeling if you're a United fan watching that? You'd have to be asking questions as to, you know, where the team is going and what they're doing and the difference in approach. I mean, you'd far better prefer being a Liverpool fan and see your team going down that way than the way Mourinho approached it.
What do you think of that, Tony?
Yeah, look, there's been a lot of talk in England this morning, likewise in Ireland, I'm sure, that, you know, the approach of teams against City. Even in midweek last week, we saw Bristol City, first 45 minutes, Championship team, caused City a few problems. Man United can't play any other way. I don't see the DNA of that football club to be conservative. For me, I've watched years and years, like Liverpool before, they go on the front foot, take on teams, make it very difficult for them. United don't do that under Jose, and I think David Silva was always a massive miss for them, because him and De Bruyne, they just link up so well, and I thought they missed him yesterday, because he does keep the ball as well as anybody.
Yeah, but then there's questions about the strength and depth Manchester City might have, despite having so many expensively assembled players available to come into the team. There's doubts about the quality. So are they missing a trick? We spoke at length on Friday about Alexis Sanchez. You said he should go to Manchester City because he'd play and he'd win trophies. Now it looks almost like he's going to go to Manchester United. Now, is he the player Manchester United need?
Well, it certainly made him better, Matt. He's an excellent player. We know that. That's why two of the leading clubs in the country want him, and probably more than that would. Arsenal would love to keep him. I'm sure Liverpool would be interested in a player of his quality. Matt, what surprises me with City, we've got carried away. They got beat once this year. Now, if we go to next season, I think Pep will have a better team than he's got this season. So if we go forward, he will improve that group again. That squad of players will be better quality, and he will make another big signing up front. I think the long-term future, or long-term, but the next 18 months, I don't know if Aguero will be in their starting lineup. That's why I wanted Sanchez, I felt.
Okay. Also, I mentioned jokingly at 6 o'clock, maybe Martin O'Neill might be a contender for the job at Arsenal when it becomes available. But, Paul, how sad is it to see a guy like Arsene Wenger, who was, in his early years, had such brilliant Arsenal teams, the Invincibles of 2003, 2004, just hang in there so long and just oversee a decline of a big club?
Yeah, it's desperately sad. I've been a huge Wenger fan from the moment he got in there, and I've loved his attitude, and I look at him now and I just wonder, I mean, what's the point? His legacy is seriously damaged, and I don't know what joy he gets in it. I really don't. I mean, what's, you know, if you're not enjoying what you're doing, and he's clearly not enjoying what he's doing, and it's not showing through his work, then why is he there? Why is he hanging on? I don't know.
Why do you think he is, Tony?
It's very difficult one to answer, because I've always felt Arsene Wenger's never had, well, say never had, in recent years, he has had a people close to him. You know, he split up from his missus, who was football crazy. He lives in a big house in Totteridge, and I'm led to believe he's alone. Spoke to Martin Keown about Arsene. He said he watches football after football match. And I don't get that feeling. He's a very close person to Steve Bould and people around him. Jens Lehmann has come into the club. But I think Arsene's so much his own man that he doesn't probably hear other voices and be told, well, maybe we need to go this way. I think his ego has certainly taken him to a place where it's going to end badly, and it's going to be a sad ending, because we've all appreciated and loved what he's brought to the English game. But as what we saw yesterday at Bournemouth was really a decline of a side that is, I can't even see any of their teams, any of their players getting any of the other top sides, because they're so short in many, many areas. And their best players are wanting to leave now. So, Arsene, what is it, man? How much does it cost? Is it £1 billion change to make this team, you know, matching the giants of the English game now? I don't know. It's so difficult now for him to change that football club around.
He's just addicted to it, is he?
Yeah, I think Paul is a drug like for many of us. We love doing what we do, and I think it's that type of guy that he just will not let go. Where there's been so many occasions we can all point, and in, you know, FA Cup final last year and way beyond that, Champions League a few years ago, which he lost in the final.
That's a long time ago. No, that's 2006, a long time ago. Paul, yeah, but, what about Martin O'Neill? I need to talk in the time we've remaining about Martin O'Neill. Okay, this has been an incredible saga over the weekend. It looked like the Stoke job was his, and then he turned it down, and they've appointed Paul Lambert today. But what does it say about his dedication to the Irish job? Or was he right to do what he did as a professional sportsman?
Yeah, well, I think the only certainty, there's been millions of words written about this over the past week. I think the only certainty that you can ascertain is that a verbal agreement is not worth the contract it's not written on. And I think therein lies the problem. We're all hurting since that Denmark defeat. Martin O'Neill is hurting from the criticism. We're hurting from the performance and the fact that we're not at the World Cup next year. And that wound is festering. And it's festering for two reasons. The reality of the fact that we're not there, but also the fact that we haven't heard anything from Martin since the game. Now, I would have, if I was advising him, I would have had him sit down in front of the media a week after the game and said, OK, listen, you know, it was terrible. I'm really hurting about this. We made mistakes. We're moving on. That didn't happen, and it still hasn't happened. And we won't know. To be fair to Martin, we don't know what's going on. He was promised this. He announced this verbal agreement. Why wasn't it signed? I mean, I don't understand why it wasn't signed. Now, it could be that John Delaney made promises he couldn't deliver on. It could be that John Delaney has, he actually couldn't deliver on this. So we won't know until Martin sits down, and he's supposed to be sitting down this week, and explains what happened and what is behind his decisions to make to do what he's been doing over the last few days.
Okay, what do you make of it all, Tony?
Well, it's difficult to assess, because we had one of the greatest results we've had in a decade against Wales, the performance away from home that lifted the euphoria around Ireland and you know, lifted everybody. And then it was obviously finished off with a defeat by Denmark. And I think Martin was very hurt, not only by the defeat, but the reaction to that defeat where...
But hold on, what did he expect when you lose 5-1 at home in a game that people were hopeful we could win to go to a World Cup? Did he not expect a negative reaction, particularly when what happened with the substitutions he made at halftime?
Yeah, I know. Look, Matt, it's easy to say in hindsight. We've all been part of big defeats, embarrassing defeats. You know, as a player, I've experienced it. you know, that was an horrible day at the office for us and Martin. And I think, yes, he would have been upset and he'd have probably understood. But I think there was even some people took it a bit too far with the criticism, because we haven't got a group of players where we can go and say, do you know what, we should be in every World Cup, every Euros. We haven't. We've done exceptionally well getting to playoff matches. Now, OK, we've done a job in Denmark. It didn't materialise because of the way it panned out against Denmark. And yes, he would have made mistakes. We all know the substitutions made a massive difference. It took a gamble, Matt. We were losing the game. It took a gamble that backfired, and it backfired badly. But he had to try and win the game to get through.
Paul, with regard to the questions about his commitment to the job, I mean, whatever about Martin O'Neill, he'll be totally committed to whatever job he does, whether that was at Stoke or whether it's with Ireland. He's going to come back, and if he does come back, he'll be on the touchline again. He'll be absolutely 100% committed. So that's a nonsense. The issue now is that if he does come back, he needs some good performances, because if he comes back and there are bad performances, it could get very smelly very quick.
That is the issue for Antony, isn't it? It could actually, that there will be, whatever with the kickback after Denmark, if they keep losing games, then the man, and it's going to be hard with the players he's available to him.
Yeah, of course. And if, you know, you come back and you start your European campaign and you have any different results, Martin will be well aware that his job will be under fire. And he's, you know, it seems like Martin's experienced the last period of what Trapp had. You know, he got a lot of stick and he was, you know, he felt that he was hurt by it. And I'm totally with Paul. The commitment of Martin is never in question. And if you ask anybody who's played under him, they totally felt that Martin gave them everything. And I think he would for our job. The trouble is that we're in that period where, you know, the fans might not be quite as enthusiastic as they were a few years ago.
10-second comment, Paul Gouge.
A Premier League club were prepared to pay him a huge amount of money to manage him this week. Whose head wouldn't be turned by that?
Paul Kimmage and Tony Cascarino, thank you.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.